It's one of the most iconic moments in the history of golf. The Locale, the 18th hole on the stadium course at the Players' Championship. The opponent had won 10 of his previous 16 starts. The golf world was looking for someone who could tame a tiger.
Be the right club.
And with a 6-iron from 179, the moment was born.
Be the right club.
Welcome to the Be the Right Club Today podcast, presented by Makefield Putters.
Be the right club today.
Now, here are your hosts, Hal Sutton and Mark Greenhouse.
The Be the Right Club Today podcast, presented by Makefield Putters for the week of October 20th. Hal Sutton, Mark Greenhouse here. Hal, how's it going this week?
It's good, Mark. Ball's in the air.
Oh yeah, I don't know. Do you like fall? I'm a summer guy. I'm a hazy, hot, and humid kind of person. What's your time of year that you like the most?
Fall's my favorite time of the year. I love football, and I love it cooling down. I don't like cold weather, but I like to see it cool down a little bit.
I don't know, Hal. I might have to. I've been joking for years that I'm gonna have to like retire in Aruba where it's like 95 degrees all the time, because I'm out at soccer practice the other night with my son, and I mean, you know, the breeze was blowing. It started to sprinkle a little bit. I had, you know, like jeans and a hoodie on, and I was cold. It was like 70 degrees, and I was cold, Hal. I don't like it.
I can see you're a hoodie guy there, Mark. Yeah. I've never had a hoodie on in my life, you know, so, you know, I can stand the cool weather. Maybe that's why I like it, you know.
Yeah, well, we'll see. You know, the PGA Tour trails off, and as we usually do, we're going to recap the week in golf on the major tours. We'll get to our topic of the week, which is going to be around major championships, and then we'll give you a preview of which tours are going to be playing this week. So we're going to kick it off in our recap, as we usually do, with the PGA Tour. But they had the week off, Hal. That's like a rare week off that you get to see on the PGA Tour.
Crazy. You know, it seems like they go all the time now.
Yeah, it seems like 24/7, 365, you know, 52 weeks of the year, we got some kind of thing from the PGA Tour, but not this week. So that begs the question, Hal, and I've got it in front of me. At the peak of your career, how many events did you really feel like was a good balance to play every year? And I'm going to say the high was when you came out of the gate. In 1982, you played 31 events. In 1995, you played 31 events. You know, there was a mixture between, let's say, 24 at a couple times at the end of your career, but a lot of times you were around that 28 or so events. I mean, was that just how many you felt like playing? Is that where about the events that there were? What did you feel like playing? Was it too many? Not enough?
Well, I felt like anywhere between 26 and 28 was the right number, but 31 my first year was because it was not an all exempt tour, and I kept making the cut but not making any money, and I didn't have to Monday qualify if I made the cut. So I kept playing, basically. And, you know, as the further into the year I went, then I started playing better. And there was a reason to play because I was making some money at the time. But, you know, with the all-exempt tour that everybody plays now, you know, you can kind of pick and choose. And I think you pick and choose where you feel like you're going to make the most noise, if you will. And you know, for me, I think it was, like I said, between 26 and 28 events.
Yeah, and then, you know, and it was odd. Like I said, you were kind of around that 29. You were 29 in 92, 93, 94, and in 96 and 97. But 1995, you threw 31 back up on the board. And that year, you had a win. You had a couple of second-place finishes, four top 10s, eight top 25s. And you made 17 cuts that year, And of course, there was no FedEx Cup, so I can't tell you what you rank there. But you know, it looked like that you were maybe in a little bit of a groove that year, especially starting out the year that you won the BC Open, followed that up, or I should say later in the year, you won the BC Open. And you know, it seemed like you were playing a lot of events that year.
Well, I'm trying to get my game back because in 92 and 93, I didn't play very well. Lost my card and had to use the all-exempt money winner exemption and turned around, was comeback player of the year that year, I think. And, you know, how much you're playing is based on what you're trying to accomplish, you know, right. And if you need a break or if you don't, or, I mean, that's a moving target constantly. And to tell you that this is the right number for so-and-so, I'm not sure what the right number is today will be the right number next year.
Right. Well, and like I said, in 95, you know, and maybe you can answer this question, there was a spot where you missed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 cuts in a row, and then all of a sudden you come back at Milwaukee, you T27, you fourth place at the Bell Canadian Open, and then you win the BC Open. So is that where you took maybe a couple of weeks here and there, you found something, and then next thing you know, you're playing great again? I mean, I think that's what it's hard for maybe the lay golfer to understand, is that maybe, you know, there is sometimes you find something and it works for a bunch of weeks.
So golf is a game of feel. It is not a game of science. You're missing the cut, but you're looking for something. Mm-hmm. And you feel it, and all of a sudden you think, I felt this before. This is what I'm looking for. And you keep playing, and all of a sudden it begins to show itself, and you play much better. You know, that's one of the things that, you know, I'm a little bit, you can call me old-fashioned, you can call me whatever you want, but I don't think this is a game of science. I think it's a game of feel. And I think whether you're looking for something, like what we've been talking about, you're looking for that feel, you're looking for the club face being where it's supposed to be at the right time. And, you know, what move did I have to do in order to get that club face in the right spot? And, you know, when you finally feel it, you know, part of your body feels it and you can repeat it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think from a feel perspective, I mean, we have all this video now and all the super slow motion that these cameras can do, and, you know, the frames per second, and everybody can break down, you know, a golf swing can now be, you know, 1,000 different frames on a camera shot, and you can go, you know, millimeter by millimeter if you want to. But I always felt like, and I don't know when you started, if you ever looked at video or broke your swing down, but I always felt like on video, it screwed me up more than anything. And to your point, I would almost be better if somebody else watched the video and was telling me something, and then I was just sitting there trying to feel it. Okay, is that in the right spot? Yeah, okay, now I feel that. Where did you stand on video?
Well, I had a lot of video in my life, you know, and one of the things that I'll say is I could practice for 3 or 4 hours on something and think, man, this has got to look different on video. And I mean, not to the normal naked eye would it look different. I mean, if you really could dissect things, you might see something a little bit different. But change is difficult in golf, very difficult. And certainly for a guy that's hit lots of golf balls and is aged, you know, you can change some youngster's game, some, but you can't hardly change somebody that's been doing this for a while.
Yeah. All right, so over on the DP World Tour, the DP World India Championship, where Tommy Fleetwood continued his end-of-year run by winning by 2 over Kita Nakajima for his 8th tour win. The best part was his son Frankie had never been able to run out on the green to celebrate with dad winning, and they can now check that one off the list. So that's always fun to see, is when the kids get to run out there and give dad a big hug, and dad can pick him up and celebrate with him.
Yeah, I think that part of the joy of soaking in the win is the people that have supported you and loved you through thick and thin, you know, get to feel the joy of it.
So Tommy wins on the PGA Tour. He parlays that into some great Ryder Cup play. Now he's won on the DP World Tour in a short span. He's up, Hal, to number 5 in the official world golf rankings. So let me ask you this question. Does this recent form come with the pressure of winning a major championship in 2026? You got to feel like, man, Tommy's going to have some heat on him coming Augusta National in April.
Well, of course, everybody has got all these expectations of him. But I tell you, he's the one that's going to have a lot of expectations. He's wanting to elevate continually. He's wanting to climb to number one if it's possible. And he's the future is his, you know, and he's going to try to embrace it best he can.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always the case, right? The guys that have played well. I mean, we saw it a couple of years ago from a guy like Victor Hovland, man, he was lighting it up coming down the stretch at the end of the year. And I along with my co-host on the Golf Shop Radio Show, Matt Blanchard, I mean, we both had real high expectations out of Victor Hovland. And then he makes all these changes. I think he changed his short game coach. He changed his full swing coach. I think he changed his caddy, and it all kind of fell apart for him. So, you know, it's interesting that it seems like a lot of times when guys make serious changes outside of maybe Tiger, that it doesn't work out well for them. Guys change clubs. I mean, we saw that from Max Homa this year. He seemed like he was playing well, and he changed, you know, his whole sponsorship deal, and it all went sideways on him. So sometimes not changing is the way to go.
Well, you know where that all stems from, Mark. Everybody's seeking being the best they can be, and they think that they're going to turn over the next rock, and there's the answer. You know, people put pressure on them to be more than they currently are. So what do? They start looking for other answers. Somebody's got a better idea, whatever, and therefore change is implemented. And it doesn't always work out. I mean, my good friend Payne Stewart changed his ball and his clubs and everything at one time, and he struggled with it, you know, and usually doesn't work out very good.
No, and we've seen it. We've seen it from Phil Mickelson. Like I said, I mean, Tiger's made those changes, but it has even, you know, the greatest or one of the greatest of all time, we saw that it took some time to figure it all out. So that's definitely, and I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Tommy, and you know, we'll see if he can respond. We've seen him in major championships make some Sunday runs before, shoot some low numbers. I think he shot a 62 in a U.S. Open down the stretch. Wasn't enough to get him into the winner's circle, but we've seen him both ways. We've seen him make a charge coming from behind and come up short because he hasn't had maybe a good Saturday round when he was in contention. We've also, you know, we've seen him be in contention going into Sunday and not be able to close the deal. So we'll see if this newfound resurgence of being able to close the deal can make something happen in the majors in 2026. And we'll talk more about those majors in our second segment. Over on the LPGA Tour, Se-Young Kim carded a final round 67 to hold off any final round challengers as she claimed a 4-stroke victory at the BMW Ladies Championship. This ended a 5-year drought and gave her the 13th title in her career. It's just crazy. She seemed like she was unbeatable there for a while on the LPGA Tour, and a 5-year drought just seems unthinkable for her. So obviously, maybe she made some changes to get better and they didn't work out.
Yeah, you never know what's going on in somebody's life.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you, you know, and this is an interesting scenario. Since Saree Pak won back-to-back majors in 1998, there have been 17 other Koreans to win an LPGA major, and many more from places like Japan and China. Does it amaze you how that one win can have such a snowball effect on a country and the, you know, internationally, and how some of these countries just suddenly start producing golfers because they have seen somebody like a Saree Pak back in 1998 win a bunch of major championships in a short period of time?
It's interesting that people follow, admire in other countries differently than we do here. You know, we've got too much going on here.
Right.
And I think that has a great deal to do with it. There's too many other interests. And, you know, when we didn't have this many interests, everybody focused really hard on trying to be the best they could be at whatever they were working on. You know, now it's got to fit in the time in many different things in order, which means you can't be as good in one thing when you're doing that.
Right. And I mean, you've got like a, maybe a guy like Seve Ballesteros that maybe, you know, is responsible for the Spanish influx. You know, I wouldn't maybe say maybe a partial with Jose Maria Olazabal, but then you know, you've got the John Rahms and the Sergio Garcias, and you have a lot more Spanish players, and you see something like that maybe on the men's side. You know, was a Peter Thompson from Australia and partially Greg Norman responsible for maybe like the likes of a Jason Day or an Adam Scott? You know, you've seen a little bit of an explosion from there. I mean, Annika Sorenstam, there's a lot more Swedish players on the LPGA Tour. So you're right. It seems like a lot of the other countries, less sports, less professional leagues, less players in those leagues, much more focus when somebody does have a great amount of success on a PGA or an LPGA Tour.
Well, I think these other countries, they make it fun a little more so. They have leagues that they play in. They have, you know, one of the things that I think is hurting American sports right now is the individual lessons that everybody's paying for. And you think you can learn how to play golf in a room, basically. Mm-hmm. You learn how to play golf on the golf course. You don't learn how to play in a simulator. And, you know, you learn how to get along with other people in playing in competitions. And we don't do as much of that in all sports. You know, one of the things, my dad never put any pressure on me because he was spending money on me. But I think in today's world, you know, parents are spending a lot of money on the kids. The kids want to please the parents. And all of a sudden, you know, they've got a big investment in it. And, you know, all of a sudden it's not fun anymore because mm-hmm. I'm not pleasing my parents. And I think golf is handled differently overseas than it is here.
Yeah, and you know, and I could fall into that category. I mean, my son's a soccer player, and but you know, when he comes home from school and he wants to go out and hit a wiffle ball and catch it and hit it out in the front yard, I'm there. I'm like, I'm not saying let's go play soccer, you know. And you know, obviously, I was a big golfer, and I've let him go if he wants to go hit golf balls at some point. We'll go do that. He's done it a few times. I mean, my dad's a club professional, and my dad, when I go visit him down in Florida, my son will come out and play golf, and he'll hit the ball down the fairway. But if he wants to ask me to hit it better, I'll give him a pointer or two, but I won't harp on anything. So I try not to be that person, but it's hard not to be that person.
Yeah, I think parents fight that. You know, they want to give their child every opportunity that they can, and certainly the opportunities that they didn't have. And, you know, so finding a balance is what we're all looking for. And sometimes that's hard.
I want to take this chance to drop in a little promo for Makefield Putters, our sponsor for the Be the Right Club Today podcast, and remind everybody to head out to makefieldgolf.com and make sure you're checking them out. And like I always tell people, Hal, it's one of the best putters I've ever used, and I've tried a lot of putters in my time. I've made a lot of putts. I've missed a lot of putts. And we all know as we get older, we don't seem to make as many putts as we used to. And, you know, they're made in the USA, number one. They have a lot of great technology in them that's going to help us strike the ball on the equator, get the ball rolling quicker. That's the radial cusp technology. They've got all the different weighting systems. You can personalize these things. They've got a bunch of different styles of the putter that you can go out there and take a look at. I mean, you can center shaft it. You can heel shaft it. You can do your lengths. You can get custom fit for these things, and I encourage people to go out there and do that. You can get virtually fit. You can go find somebody that can do the club fitting for you. And, I mean, it's just amazing, you know, that it's the club. Unless you chip in or hole out, it's the club you're using on every hole, Hal, and we need to pay more attention to it sometimes.
We do. And the one thing that I really, really love about the Makefield putter is the ball gets on the ground quicker and starts rolling. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, if I could hit my line, I could make the putt sometimes. But if I felt like I played all day long and I never hit my line, the ball was usually bouncing right off of the bat. And, you know, I encourage you to go try it because it does get the ball on the ground quick.
Yeah, I will say, you know, I grew up in bent grass greens, and then when I came down and started putting on some of these Bermuda greens, man, that ball, if you don't have the right technology and the right putter, that ball is skidding forever on some of these really tightly mown Bermuda greens. And if you can get that thing rolling quicker, it stays on your line.
Exactly. You made my point for me, Mark. Thanks.
Yes. I tell you what, I wish everybody would go back to bent greens, but that's not happening. Everybody's going to the warmer grass greens down in the south. So, a Korn Ferry Tour, they're done for the season. They're going to be looking to their Q school for another chance to get some PGA Tour cards. So that comes up in December. The PGA Tour champions, Justin Leonard, overcame a three-stroke deficit in the final round to capture his second victory of the season with a one-stroke win over Thomas Bjorn and Ernie Els at the Dominion Energy Charity Classic. Hal, I know the PGA Tour went to the playoff system. We got the Champions Tour with the playoff system. Does any tour really need playoffs, or do we just need to have something, you know, at the end? I mean, I know we've contrived the PGA Tour playoffs. The Champ Tour has the playoffs now. I mean, they have the Schwab Cup. I mean, I don't know. I'm on the fence. I'd like to see an end of the season winner kind of a thing, but I don't really know if we've necessarily found the right combination for it yet.
Well, these guys need to have a break where they don't feel like they're losing ground.
Yeah.
You know, the tour, whenever I played, end of October was the last tournament of the year. And there were some silly events, but it didn't matter whether you were in those or not. You weren't losing ground to other tour players while that was going on. So, you know, they need to break mentally, physically, and right now it's year-round, you know. The world is expecting them to play all the time, and you can't play all the time.
No, that's right. That's right. So, all right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for our recap of all of our major tours. When we come back, we're going to check in with our topic of the week around major championships. So stick around on the Be the Right Club Today podcast presented by Makefield Putters, Hal Sutton and Mark Greenhalgh.
Hi, I'm Hal Sutton. 25 years ago, I had the right club at the right moment, and it made a huge difference. Today, I've teamed up with Makefield Putters. I now use the right putter today. You see, Makefield has unique radial cusp technology. The ball releases faster off the face and keeps the ball rolling more on its axis. The result is a straighter putt, more on target. When you get everything just right, the putter that fits you just right, the one that you believe in, your confidence should be oozing out of you. So I would encourage all consumers, go to the Makefield website and educate yourself and get fitted correctly, get the right putter in your hand, and there's hope for better putting ahead.
Now back to more of Be the Right Club Today, presented by Makefield Putters.
All right, welcome back to the Be the Right Club Today podcast, presented by Makefield Putters. Hal Sutton, Mark Greenhalgh here with our topic of the week. Hal, we're going to talk major championships. Gary Player ranked the majors back in the spring, and his idea was that the Open, or the British Open, was number one, the U.S. Open was number two, the PGA was number three, and the Masters was number four. And he really essentially based this on how long each one of them has been around, kind of putting them as the tradition. The more tradition, the higher the ranking. So I personally rank them, the Masters number one, the Open Championship number 2, the U.S. Open number 3, and the PGA 4 in terms of prestige. How would you rank them? It's tough.
Mark, PGA is number 1 for sure.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're a PGA champion. Yeah, I get it.
No. You know, let's just say this. The weakest field of all of them is the Masters.
Right.
And so I'd have a hard time ranking it number 1. I'd rank it number 1 as far as tradition is concerned.
Right.
But I can't rank it number 1. Open Championship has been around the longest. I can tell you in many, many ways, the Opens that I played in, very difficult to win. I mean, just the tee times alone, from 6:30 or 7 in the morning until 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, you can get beat by weather there.
Right.
And if you... You know, you got to endure weather most of the time in order to win there. U.S. Open is usually a test of your mental capabilities, because they have this fixation that par will win one day, you know, or over par. And I mean, I've seen some pretty difficult conditions in the U.S. Open. So, you know, I don't know. I have a hard time ranking those, and I think each year might be different based on the venue too,
you right know? And we're going to talk about venues now. You know, I know the LPGA went to 5 majors, the Champions Tour has 5 majors. Should the Players Championship be a 5th major? I mean,
of course it should be.
it legitimately fits, right? I mean, it is I mean, you can't qualify for it other than by, you know, I mean, you can't go out and open qualify for it. You can open qualify for the Open Championship, the U.S. Open. I mean, you can, in a roundabout sort of way, you can qualify for the Masters because you have to qualify for the U.S. Amateur or one of those events to get in as an amateur, right? Mm-hmm. So in a sense, the Masters still has some form of a qualification to get into it. The PGA, I mean, guys can win the PGA Pro Championship and get into that. There's 20 of those guys that get in there. You know, the Players Championship, I mean, the only guys that get in are, you know, there's a strict criteria list. There's really not an open shot to get in that thing.
No, and technically it's got the strongest field out of all of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. This has been debated. We could build a case both ways on this, and, you know, opinion largely. So, anyway, I don't know.
But, you know, I mean, we have, you know, like I said, LPGA has it. Champions Tour has it. I mean, it makes sense to have 5 majors at this point. I know. And you know, we've seemed to go away from so many traditions, right? In all sports, we seem to lose tradition. I mean, I went to Clemson University. I watched all the things that happened at football games. Some of the tradition has gone from that. There's new tradition. Some of the cheers they used to do, something as simple as the cheers they used to do, have changed over the years. And you've lost some of the tradition. I mean, it angers me a little bit, but I understand it. So I don't see why, with all the changes that we're making, that it just makes sense. It's one of the most difficult tournaments. It's one of the most prestigious tournaments to win. It makes sense to make it a 5th major. And yeah, you've won it twice. You'd be a 3-time major champion.
Well, you know what I learned, Mark, is I have very little effect on other people's decisions. So I'm not going to lose any sleep over whether they ever make it a 5th major or whatever. You know, I was happy to have the career that I had, and I'll tell you another thing I'm happy about, that I don't have to get up in the morning and worry about whether I can hit the fairway or I can hit the green. You know, life is simple right now, and that's the way I like it.
There you go. Well, people would listen even less to me than they will to you, so at least you got a little more pull than I do. You know, and I would say, you know, we talked about the PGA, and I would say, at least over the last 10 years, the PGA has probably, and outside obviously of Augusta, but I still have a problem with Augusta. I'm getting to that in a second. I think the PGA championship has done the best job in terms of making it fun to watch, in terms of the courses they're using and making it playable. I feel like that they've made the challenge. You hit good shots, you make eagles and birdies. You hit bad shots, you make bogeys, double bogeys, and worse. I feel like they've done the best on that over the last 10 years in terms of setting up the golf course, and I think Kerry Hague's done a great job.
Well, I'm a fan of Kerry. He does really well. I wasn't really happy with the way they set up Beth Page this year, but that might have been Keegan rather than Kerry, you know. But anyway, Kerry's always done a really good job.
And I think that, you know, even Augusta National, and, you know, you've played it. I have never played it. I know it's gotten Tiger-proofed and you know, what Bryson-proofed now and whatever. But I just feel like, and I don't know what your feelings are, when you watch the Masters on the weekend, and especially on Sunday, I always felt like, up until maybe the last 3 or 4 years, that we always heard the term that the Masters doesn't start until the back nine on Sunday. And I feel like they've made the par fives on the back nine almost too difficult, where we're not getting that roar of somebody making an eagle, or the run that Jack Nicklaus had, or some of the things that Tiger has done, or, you know, Seve Ballesteros after Jack birdies 16, Seve dumping it in the water on 15. I don't feel like we've had that volatility on the back nine because they've lengthened 13 and 15 and made them much more difficult to stop the scoring. But we've almost ruined the drama that we could have on the back nine. Where do you feel on that?
Well, they've made so many changes at Augusta. I mean, it's been a while since I've been there, but just watching on TV, you know, they have made tremendous changes. And, you know, I think everybody gets too fixed on trying to keep something from happening rather right. than allowing something to happen, which is what you're talking about, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, eagles, they used to give away eagle goblets. I'm sure they still do, you know. And we were all trying to make eagles. And
right.
You know, you just don't see as many eagles there as you used to.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, by the way, speaking of, giving away, Crystal, did you ever try not to win the par three championship with the, knowing that the winner of the par three has never won the green jacket?
Well, no, I actually won the par three contest 1 year. So, no, I didn't try to avoid it. You know, I didn't try to win it, but I didn't try to avoid it either. Maybe that was my problem at Augusta. Maybe I should have never tried to win, and I maybe wouldn't have cared, you know. I think we go in there, that's a big deal, you know. You go in there, and you really you care too much sometimes, you know. I think a lot of guys that have a lot of talent go in there, and they're just caring too much. They put so much pressure on themselves. I mean, we see it all the time. I mean, took a while for Tommy Fleetwood to overcome that. He cared so much, you know.
I mean, do you think now that Rory's kind of got that monkey off his back, do you think he can win more than one green jacket? I mean, that's the one major, and you know, that tee shot on 10 that 1 year that sent his, you know, his mind spiraling at Augusta National. And you know, it's almost like, is there more pressure on him this year to come back and play well there again? Because the expectation is, man, he should have 3 or 4 green jackets. Now it's like, now we're expecting you to win 2 or 3 more.
Well, your key word that you said, can he? He certainly can. I mean, he's got more talent than almost anybody right now. And, you know, it's still mental. He's going to have to put it together to do it. It's not physical for him. It's mental.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how he returns next year. You mentioned it when we were talking about ranking the golf courses. Does the USGA depend too much on the right weather to set up their golf course? And were they obsessed with par too much at some point?
Well, first of all, they won't ever take it anywhere where it might be hot. That's a big issue for them. They don't want it to be, you know, they're not going to take it somewhere down south because too much heat in June, which means you might not play one of the I don't know. I'm just talking off the cuff here. You know, they're missing. They're taking some of the golf courses out of the equation because of that. Right. And then they get too fixed on they don't want the scores to get low. So,
I mean, it seems like they set up a golf course to meet a certain standard. And then we see that if the weather or the wind kicks up and the golf course gets too dry, it gets out of control. And then on the flip side of that, it's like if they get the rain, then it becomes too easy. It's almost like they're riding that razor's edge. And if the weather doesn't match what that razor's edge is, then it goes one way or the other. It's just the strain. And that's why I say the PGA Championship seems to get it right. It's like, man, we don't care what these guys shoot. We just want to reward good shots and penalize bad shots.
That's the attitude that they should have. But, you know, the USGA, they ride a fine edge there. You know, it can get out of hand pretty quickly with the way they try to set the golf course up.
I mean, I go back to, you know, Graham McDowell winning at Pebble Beach. You know, I forget what year it was. Was it 07 or something along those lines or whatever year it was? You know, and the 17th hole is a great hole at Pebble Beach. Yeah. But yet, the only guys that were hitting the green, the ball had to land in the right rough and get the right kick to actually hit the green. Anybody that landed on the green, it had no chance of staying on the green. And that's where my frustration comes with the USGA. It's like, man, a guy could hit a great shot on the 17th hole, you know, land it right on the front edge of the green, right at the flag stick, and end up making five because the ball goes bounding over the back of the green. Like, I just have a problem with that. And I feel like that's where they've lost me. And, you know, when I would say course setup, they would be last at course setup for me.
Well, unfortunately, they're so buried in their own belief that they don't care what you think, Mark.
No.
I mean, I'm being honest when I say that. You know, the USGA, they have their own belief, and they're going to live up to that, whatever that is. You know, Shinnecock, it can get out of hand at Shinnecock.
Yes.
And, you know, they take it to some places where it can truly get pretty edgy.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask you this question, and we'll get back to another one in a second. But which upcoming venue is going to be the most interesting? You've got the U.S. Open coming to Shinnecock next, Pebble Beach, Wingfoot, Pinehurst, Marion, and Riviera. Very good golf courses. The Open is coming to Birkdale and St. Andrews, and I'm here to tell you that I think Birkdale – people don't pay enough attention to, because there's been some great golf and great winners at Birkdale. And then the PGA is going to Aronimink, Frisco down your way, Olympic, Baltusrol, Congressional, and Kiowa. Which one of those do you think are going to be the most interesting?
Well, they're all capable. You know, I don't know anything about Frisco when you mentioned it's coming down our way. You know, the PGA, I hate to say that, but that was about money right there to have it on their own golf course. You know, sure. There's too much of that that goes on too, where, mm-hmm. you know, the almighty dollar is making the decision on what we're doing. I mean, I wish it wasn't that way. You know, Aronimink is a great course from the past. I played there in the U.S. Amateur a long time ago. Jay Siegel grew up there, you know, so he spent a lot of time there. Shinnecock is a great venue. You can get a lot of different things at Shinnecock.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I don't know. I mean, I like the fact that Pebble Beach hosts the U.S. Open. It's just hard for me when a golf course hosts an event every year and then it becomes a major championship. It's a little, you know, we have the same thing here at Quail Hollow, you know, but I think they've still run both events during the year at Pebble Beach before, because one's, you know, in early in the year and then one's in June, and it can play differently, you know, in that time of the year. It's just, I don't know. It's weird to me sometimes.
Well, and you know, I love Pebble Beach. You know, if God came down and said, Hal, tomorrow's your last day, I'd say, I want the first tee time at Pebble Beach. And when I finish, I'll go over and play Cypress Point.
There you go.
Pebble is short compared to everything else right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, is it still the major venue that it once was? And, you know, it's certainly still a major venue when it comes to scenic. And, you know, Wingfoot's one of the great golf courses in America, without a doubt. Can be as hard as anything under the sun. You know, a lot of great golf courses. You know, it depends on, a lot of it depends on weather.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Pinehurst is a great, not Pinehurst number two is a great golf course, but I have a problem. Like, you know, a couple years ago, the Rory Bryson showdown, I mean, Rory goes to the fifth hole and absolutely flags his second shot, and the ball gets within 20 feet of the hole, rolls all the way back off the green, around a bunker, down into some, a horrible lie in pine straw. And to me, I don't like that. Like, to hit, again, that's my, a guy hits a beautiful tee shot, a beautiful second shot. Now, if the ball rolls off the green into a bunker, I'm okay with that. But where his ball ended up on that hole was absurd to me. He goes from, you know, hitting two great shots. It doesn't stay in the green. Fine. It's down in a bunker. I have a chance of getting it up and down for a four. Worst case, I'm probably going to make five. I think he made six. And, you know, it, and it cost him a shot. Did it cost him the tournament? Potentially, you know, he makes four there and gets on a run. Things could be different. But I have a problem, again, with good shots ending up in bad places.
Well, we're kind of building golf courses that way now, Mark. Yeah. There's a lot of golf courses that the runoff can be up to 100 yards. You can hit it within 4 or 5 feet of the hole, and it, you know, return 100 yards down the fairway. I've seen that happen several times. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of modern day golf, really, in a way.
Yeah. Question is, who are your top three best players to never win a major championship? And I got to throw it out there. I got to say Colin Montgomery is at the top of everybody's list. Is he a no-brainer for that list?
He is. There's, you know, Lee Westwood.
Yeah.
Played really well in a lot of them and never won one. Luke Donald, you know, if we want to talk American. Matt Kuchar, never won a major. Won a lot of money and played well in majors, but didn't win one.
It's hard. What about a guy like Sam Torrance, who was a really a good, really, really, I think, underrated player on the European tour? You know, he's a guy that had some serious game.
Yeah, Sam did. His dad, great teacher. There's no real answer to that, you know. Sometimes I think being in the right place, getting the right break at the right time. I'm sure I don't study it like you do, Mark, but I'm sure Colin had his chances to win and something one way or the other didn't work out, you know, and if we had him on, he could tell us some of those things, you know.
Get him on, give him a call, Hal. If you have his number, we'll get him on.
I could probably get him on sometime.
There you go.
Probably wouldn't be a bad idea.
No. Yeah. You know, I mean, just all the success that he was a guy that never won on the PGA Tour, you know, in the United States, you know, and Tommy Fleetwood broke that jinx, you know, and I'm going to just for giggles, I'm going to throw two names out there and nobody has any clue who these two guys are, but Harry Cooper and Bill Mellhorn, these are guys that won. I'm talking serious events on the PGA Tour. I mean, Cooper had 36 professional wins, 29 on the PGA Tour. You know, and these guys are from, you know, the early, you know, the 20s and 30s and the 40s and 50s. And Mellhorn was somebody that had 19 PGA Tour wins. And these guys, you know, played in a bunch, you know, obviously they didn't have the Masters to play in for the most part, but these are guys that had a lot of top 10, top five finishes in major championships and had a lot of success on the early PGA Tour and didn't win. So, you know, it's not unprecedented for guys like a Colin Montgomery to have that much success and not get a W.
Well, so, like I said, there's a lot of being in the right place at the right time and hitting the right shot at the right time.
Yeah. One last thing on the major championships, you know, we know the Open Championship has a rotation. It seems like the USGA is leaning more towards a rotation. The PGA is maybe has some golf courses in the rotation, but they're not as locked in as maybe the other two are. Do you like that? Do you not like that? Do you like a rotation and still getting some of the other golf courses involved? I think I'm kind of in the middle somewhere.
Well, I like a little bit of a rotation. I hope that we don't get so fixed on one place because we make more money out of it than we would somewhere else. So, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think a place like Chambers Bay was a bit of a debacle. I did not like that golf course at all. I didn't like the way it played. I didn't like, you know, a ball on the first hole rolling 60 yards down off the side and going to Never Never Land. Again, I don't like that stuff. That's for me, that's not golf. But to your point, that's what we're heading towards.
Well, they're doing it a lot, you know, and I don't like it either. Personally, I don't think that's golf. But, you know, one of the reasons why this is happening, though, is because our agronomy is so good. The grasses are so short and you can't do some of the things you used to do. Like, I'll give you, for instance, Pinehurst number two. That wouldn't have happened in the old days because the greens weren't that fast. We're trying to play golf courses too fast, to be honest with you.
Yep, I 100% agree. All right, well, when we come back, we're going to catch up with what's going to happen in this week in golf. So stick around for that. Hal Sutton, Mark Greenhalgh, Be the Right Club Today podcast presented by Makefield Putters. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Hal Sutton. 25 years ago, I had the right club at the right moment, and it made a huge difference. Today, I've teamed up with Makefield Putters. I now use the right putter today. You see, Makefield has unique radial cusp technology. The ball releases faster off the face and keeps the ball rolling more on its axis. The result is a straighter putt, more on target. When you get everything just right, the putter that fits you just right, the one that you believe in, your confidence should be oozing out of you. So I would encourage all consumers, go to the Makefield website and educate yourself and get fitted correctly, get the right putter in your hand, and there's hope for better putting ahead.
Now back to more of Be the Right Club Today, presented by Makefield Putters.
All right, time to wrap it up for this week, Hal, on the Be the Right Club Today podcast. Hal Sutton, Mark Greenhalgh, presented by Makefield Putters. The PGA Tour is at the Bank of Utah Championship. That is out Black Desert Resort out in Utah. And that was won last year by Matt McCarty at 23 under par. So going to be interested to see how that one plays out. Again, big stuff happening. You got the FedEx Cup fall. You got guys trying to position themselves for the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am and the Genesis Invitational via the Aon Next 10. So make sure that you're inside of the Next 10 as we go through these final events on the PGA Tour. Interesting, again, Hal, just another exemption category that these guys can fall into for those signature events and give them a chance.
I think you need a computer now to keep up with what's available. Yeah, so, you know, life seemed simpler whenever I was playing a long time ago. You know, we knew what we had to do. We knew the different exemptions that would get us in or what we had to do in a tournament, you know.
Yeah.
I never will forget when Daly won at Crooked Stick. The pin was on the back right, and I knew to get in the Masters the next year, I needed birdie to finish in the top eight to get into the Masters the next year. And I stuck it out over that water and went right for it and hit it about 4 feet and made the putt. So I got into the Masters the next year. We were aware of those sort of things. You know, now there's so many things.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just, it's crazy. All the different exemptions. I think I said, what did I say? A couple weeks ago, 39 or something like that, different exemption categories. It's crazy.
That's right. Yeah.
The DP World Tour, the Genesis Championship in South Korea, Byung-Hun Ahn overcame fellow South Korean Tom Kim in a playoff on home soil to win his second DP World Tour title and first in 9 years. Ahn did not have a great year on the PGA Tour following that win. He finished 74th and missed the playoffs just barely. So we'll be looking to see maybe if he can continue his success on home soil again. Probably a lot of pressure on these guys to really go home and try and light it up on home soil in front of the fans.
Yeah. Pressure every week in the world of golf.
In one form or another, right? Like you just said, PGA Championship, you got to stick it in there close to make the Masters the next year. Something's always on the line, it seems like.
Yep.
LPGA joins the DP World Tour far, far away in the Republic of Korea for the Hanwha Life Plus International Crown. And this is an interesting one, Hal. This is a team event with players from 7 countries and a world team. Last one in 2023 by the country of Thailand. Not sure how they come up with their teams. My feeling is that they figure out who commits to play and then they go from there. Because the world team is made up of Brooke Henderson from Canada, Charlie Hull from England, and I think a couple other people from different countries. So very strange that they had to go out and find an eighth team to participate. So again, and it's an event that's not held every year. It's every couple of years or maybe some random combination, maybe when they have a sponsor, to your point, driven by Money Hal. So I don't know, an event that I could take or leave, not, and it's far away, so, and it's going to happen in the middle of the night, so I'm not really sure it's on my radar.
Probably not on a lot of people's radar. So, yes, I mean, so many things are money-driven now. We know that.
Yeah. Korn Ferry Tour, like I said earlier, done for the year. Q School's up in December. And the Champ Tour playoffs, round two. The Simmons Bank Championship won by Patty Harrington last year. He has 2 wins this year and sits 6th in the points. And by the way, we mentioned the Open Championship going to Birkdale. Patty Harrington won his 2nd major championship there at Birkdale at the Open Championship. So good on Patty Harrington and good on him. Maybe he's got a push this year to win the Schwab Cup.
Yeah, well, the Simmons Bank Championship up there in Little Rock, well supported in Little Rock. The people love their golf up there in Little Rock, and I hope they have a great championship up there this week.
Well, and there you go. That's our Week in Golf coming up, presented by Makefield Putters. Make sure you head out to makefieldgolf.com and check out all of their putters out there. And Hal, there's a rumor that on your next visit to the Be the Right Club Today podcast, I think we're going to have a special guest. We're going to have hopefully John McGinnis join us. So we'll get you two involved in a discussion. And with McGinnis, you never know where the conversation's going to end up.
Well, I love discussions, and I especially love discussions with John McGinnis. He's a good guy and a lot of fun, and I'm sure the podcast will be that week.
Well, all right. Well, everybody, until then, Hal, thanks for joining us this week. And until then, join us every week. Todd Burrell will be back next week on the Be the Right Club Today podcast, presented by Makefield Putters. Join us then. Mark Greenhalgh, Hal Sutton, Todd Burrell. We'll talk to y'all later.